The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Ed Tremblay from the North Carolina Reading Service. For the next half hour, I'll be reading to you from the Tar Heel Junior Historian magazine, North Carolina History for Students. We're going to resume in the Spring 2024 edition, It's Revolutionary, Choices in Conflict. This is Volume 63, Number 2. The first article today is North Carolina's Revolutionary War Soldiers, 1775 to 1783 by Douglas R. Dorney, Jr., who is a licensed architect practicing in Raleigh. Since 2002, he has researched the Revolutionary War in the Carolinas. His more recent research articles can be found online and in printed editions of the Journal of the American Revolution. North Carolina Patriot soldiers played a critical role in winning the Revolutionary War. At the beginning of the war in 1775, North Carolina had the fourth largest population of the original 13 colonies. Among its 300,000 occupants, about 36,000 men served in one of its military units. These soldiers fought in more than 100 battles and skirmishes in at least seven states, from Georgia to as far as north as New York. A skirmish is a minor fight in war, usually related to larger movements or battles. Geographically, soldiers from North Carolina units served outside their home state as much, if not more, than any other state's soldiers. Those who supported and fought for independence were generally called Patriots or Whigs, W-H-I-G-S. Thousands of North Carolinians sided with the British and fought for the British during the war. These citizens and soldiers were generally called Loyalists, but also Royalists or Tories, T-O-R-I-E-S. North Carolina had a relatively high number of Loyalists compared to other states. North Carolina Patriot soldiers could serve in the military in three different ways: as a Continental soldier, with the state troops, or with the militia. Militias had existed throughout colonial times. They were groups of men who formed to protect local areas and were not trained as professional soldiers. North Carolina state troops formed as the colony moved toward declaring itself a state. These troops, organized by the Third Provincial Congress, were led by Major General John Ashe from 1778 to 1779. Most of the state troops were then transferred to the Continental Army or reported to local militia groups. The Second Continental Congress created the Continental Army on June 14, 1775. George Washington was named its commanding officer the following day. This army was a professional fighting force, and soldiers received training. In some cases, men served in all of these units, militia, state troops, and Continental Army, at different times. About 22,000 to 28,000 of the 30,000 to 36,000 North Carolina soldiers served in the militia and state troops at least once during the war. Very little was known about most Revolutionary War soldiers. Why? Because personal and government records were not as common as they are today. Of those that were written, many have not survived. Fortunately, in recent years, researchers and historians have learned a considerable amount about these soldiers from their pension applications filed in the first half of the 1800s. A pension is the money paid to a person following retirement from service or to surviving dependents. Pension documents generally reveal the men's birth dates, where and when they enlisted, the battles they fought in, and where they lived after the war. In some instances, men reveal details like their height, race or ethnicity, and occupation. North Carolina's Revolutionary War soldiers could serve in three ways: as a volunteer, a draftee, who is a person who is drafted or ordered by the government to serve in the military, or as a substitute, serving in another man's place. Among the state's militiamen, about 38% of men volunteered every time they served. However, about half of all militiamen were drafted or required to serve at least once during the war. How long these soldiers served overall depended mostly upon which branch they served. Continental soldiers generally served the longest. A 1 or 3 year term was the most common. Militia and state troops served less time in comparison. A 3 month term was the most common. Overall, the majority of militia and state troops served 2 to 3 terms, averaging between 6 and 11 months of total service. Most Continental soldiers served 1 term and averaged about 23 months of service overall. About half of North Carolina Patriot soldiers were born outside of the colony. Approximately 56% of the militia and 48% of Continental soldiers were born in one of the other 12 colonies, mostly Virginia, Maryland, and Pennsylvania. The average birth date of North Carolina soldiers was 1756 to 1757. That means that the average age of a soldier at the midpoint of the war, about 1779, was between 22 and 23 years old. However, there were also much younger soldiers, too. Around 23% of Continental soldiers were between 14 and 18 years old when they joined the Army. Several militia veterans in the pension applications note their ages as young as 14 to 15 years old at the time of their service. Overall, these soldiers were also shorter than most people today. The average height of North Carolina Continental soldiers was 5 feet 7 1/2 inches. About 7% of Continental soldiers who filed pension applications were free men of color. Most of these men were African or African American. The remaining were multiracial or American Indian men. Generally, enslaved men were prohibited from serving as soldiers, but there is at least one instance of an enslaved man, Ishmael Titus, being freed for serving in his enslaver's place. Between 68 and 75% of all North Carolina Patriot soldiers fought in at least one battle or skirmish during the war. About a half of all men fought in 1 or 2 battles, and a small percentage fought in 5 or more. Interestingly, North Carolina Continental soldiers fought no large-scale battles in the state. Their largest battles were fought in Pennsylvania, New Jersey, and South Carolina. In October 1780, North Carolina militia participated in the Battle of Kings Mountain in South Carolina. There, some 900 Patriots defeated Loyalists under the command of British Major Patrick Ferguson. And in March 1781, militia forces took part in the most prominent North Carolina battle at Guilford Courthouse. It was at the Battle of Guilford Courthouse that the British Army under Lord Cornwallis won what is called a Pyrrhic victory over the Americans. A Pyrrhic victory is a victory achieved at excessive cost or loss. The British drove the American army from the field of battle, but they suffered such high casualties they were forced to retreat all the way to Wilmington. The Battle of Guilford Courthouse on March 15, 1781 in present-day Greensboro was the largest and most famous battle of the war in the state. In the decades after the war, veterans, 3/4 of them, became farmers. Many settled on land grants awarded to them as payment for their military service. Those who moved away mostly went to states like Tennessee, Georgia, Kentucky, or South Carolina. Only about 39% of militia and 50% of Continental veterans remained in North Carolina by the time their pensions were filed. Tens of thousands of war veterans were still alive in the 1820s when they began to receive pension payments for their war service almost 45 years before. The last few of these soldiers were alive to witness the American Civil War. Here are the captions accompanying this article. Reenactors portraying young soldiers who played a critical role in winning the Revolutionary War. Siege de Yorktown by Auguste Cuder, painted circa 1836, commemorates the 1781 battle at Yorktown. The man gesturing in the center is French officer the Comte de Rochambeau. To the right is General George Washington, and just behind Washington to the right is the Marquis de Lafayette. There are two sidebar articles accompanying this article. The first is, how do we know? The information in this article comes from pension records. Pensions were monies given to soldiers, widows, or next of kin. Following the war, pensions were available to Continental Line soldiers. They were later made available to all men who served for at least 6 months. Pension application records are primary sources created by people who experienced the war and its effects firsthand. Of course, many soldiers or their next of kin did not file pension applications. They may not have been able to read or write or know the process, or their applications may have been lost. At times, their service could not be validated, and their applications were rejected. More than 4,000 North Carolina Revolutionary War pension applications were studied by the author of this article to gather the data you read here. You can find many Revolutionary War pension records online from the National Archives. There's a photograph of a pension document. Its caption says, "This document is part of the pension application for Hugh McDonald of Richmond County. He served the North Carolina line of the Continental Army at the battles of Germantown and Brandywine." The second sidebar article is Those Sons of Liberty. The Sons of Liberty was a loosely organized group of patriots who sought to challenge and undermine British rule. Given the secrecy and informal nature of the organization, primary sources with member names or roster numbers are rare. It's thought that the group originated in 1765 with nine Boston businessmen who strongly opposed the Stamp Act and evolved into the Sons of Liberty. In the following months and years, additional chapters popped up across the colonies. Members planned and carried out acts of civil disobedience, including public protests, riots, and harassment of public officials. But sometimes violence broke out. You may have heard of one of their most famous efforts, which involved dumping thousands of pounds of British tea into a harbor, also known as the Boston Tea Party. On February 6, 1765, British House of Commons member Isaac Barré cautioned Parliament regarding passage of the Stamp Act. In his speech, he defended American colonists and seemingly inspired the Sons of Liberty name. "They grew by your neglect of them. As soon as you began to care about them, that care was exercised in sending persons to rule over them, in one department and another, who were perhaps the deputies of deputies to some member of this house, sent to spy out their liberty, to misrepresent their actions and to prey upon them, men whose behavior on many occasions has caused the blood of those Sons of Liberty to recoil within them." There are two photographs accompanying this article. One of them is a portrait of Colonel Isaac Barré, painted in 1785 by Gilbert Stuart, and the other is a transcript of Tuesday morning, December 17, 1765. "The true-born Sons of Liberty are desired to meet under Liberty Tree at 12 o'clock this day to hear the public resignation under oath of Andrew Oliver, Esquire, distributor of stamps for the province of the Massachusetts Bay. A resignation? Yes." The next article is From Memoir to Movie by Sally Causey Bloom, who turning primary resources into film is something Sally Causey Bloom loves doing as an educator at the North Carolina Museum of History. Meet Hugh McDonald, the 14-year-old from Cumberland County who fought with the Loyalists at the Battle of Moore's Creek in February 1776. And meet Hugh McDonald of Cumberland County, who in June 1776 joined the Continental Army, serving in the 6th North Carolina Regiment. They were the same person. Well, actually, the images above are from an actor portraying Hugh McDonald, but McDonald was real. 8 pages of Hugh McDonald's memoirs, housed in the State Archives of North Carolina, provide details of his capture and release at Moore's Creek with his Scottish Highlander father. He writes about his enlistment in the Continental Army, inoculation for smallpox, participation in the battles of Brandywine and Germantown in Pennsylvania, the death of North Carolina General Francis Nash, and more, including this description of a parade in Philadelphia on July 4, 1777. The order of the day for the 4th of July, 1777, was for every man to wash himself, put on his best apparel, powder his hair, black his shoes or boots, and be ready to fall in rank at 8 o'clock. We, with the Grand Army, marched to and fro in the streets of Philadelphia until about 11 o'clock, when we commenced firing and fired 13 rounds for every state in the Union. At every round, we were ordered hats pulled off and 3 cheers given. Huzzah! Liberty or death. Another memorable experience of Hugh's service took place following the Battle of Germantown. His platoon of 16, all teenagers, paraded before General George Washington's headquarters. Captain George Daugherty told General Washington, "These are the children who broke the line of the rough Hessian soldiers 4 times without the loss of but one man." McDonnell recalled that General Washington replied, "They are a likely set of boys. You should set great store by them." This was followed by a frolic for the platoon with refreshments provided by the general. But prior to those Revolutionary War experiences, Hugh McDonnell shared how following the Battle of Moore's Creek, he, his father, and others were taken as prisoners by Patriot soldiers. He writes, "After every person was searched and all the ammunition taken they found with us, we all got passports and were permitted to go home, except for our officers who were taken prisoners and sent to Philadelphia." Once home, Hugh McDonnell's father and most of their Highlander neighbors sought to repair their fences and wait for planting season. In June, word came about men in the area mustering a Patriot militia. Mustering is the act of gathering, especially a formal military inspection. Many locals took shelter in the swamps, but not Hugh McDonnell's father. Until the men actually appeared in the field he was plowing. Hugh's father left the horse standing in the plow and fled and ordered Hugh to gather the horse and follow. Hugh was not quick enough. The Patriots required Hugh to pilot them through the neighborhood toward the muster. Hugh protested, "I durst not, or my father will kill me." But they insisted. At 14, Hugh faced a dilemma, which is a situation that creates a difficult choice. He felt caught between his loyalist father's stern orders and the requirement of others focused on raising troops for the new Continental Army. Hugh attended the muster and traveled to Cross Creek, now Fayetteville, where he enlisted on June 10, 1776. Hugh's story demonstrates that not all choices regarding which side to support arose from a person's ideals. Instead, Hugh went along with the Patriots, it appears from his memoir, because going home was the worst option. But that does not explain why Hugh stayed with the Continental Army through days, months, and years of battle and boredom, marching and waiting, cold and heat, hunger and thirst. The museum's narrative film, Friends in Liberty, North Carolina and the American Revolution, is based on Hugh McDonnell's primary source. A primary source is a document, diary, manuscript, photograph, or other item created at the time of an event. This means that the film, while fictional, was written using the memoir as the basis of the storytelling. The film follows the experiences of Hugh McDonnell and his friend Ann Taylor. The fictitious character of Ann provides a girl's view of life during the Revolutionary War as she struggles with increasing responsibilities at home after her brother Samuel joins the militia. Pre-production work, research, script writing, casting, costuming, location scouting took place over 6 months, beginning in October 2008. Filming occurred over 8 days in April, May, and June 2009. Post-production work, editing, musical scoring, and graphics occurred in June and July. Filming locations included the Benahan House at historic Stagville, which dates to the Revolutionary period. Middle and high school students performed the music and were vocalists for the film, and volunteers made up the costume and props crew. Of the several hundred actors who auditioned, 22 performed in the film. Speaking of the platoon of teenagers who paraded for their commander-in-chief, Scott Parker, who played General Washington, recalled feeling pride for the captain and his North Carolina children in their extraordinary accomplishment during the Revolutionary War. It served as a wonderful reminder that these were real people, just like us, doing their best in very difficult times. The high schoolers who performed as soldiers and militiamen were surprised at the age of the Patriots. "I was extremely surprised that teens fought in the war," said Alex Hunt. "At age 17, most of those kids were actually younger than me. I felt honored to be able to reenact their struggle and success." Matt Mollenkopf, who played Samuel Taylor, shared his surprise at being cast at age 16. "I assumed the soldiers in the Revolution were in their 20s. It adds something to the story that the soldiers were so young. It's a story that needs to be told." Sarah Catherine Carter, who played young Ann Taylor, shared, "I learned that the American Revolution affected everyone in North Carolina, not just those who went off to fight, but also the families and friends left behind." And Spencer Bloom, who played Hugh McDonald, noted, "When I first read the script, I thought it was remarkable that the responsibilities of the Revolution fell into the hands of young people. But while shooting this film, I realized that Revolution still comes from the younger generation. This is what makes this story so powerful. It's a story that is still being told today. Young people continue to be the incendiary change in the world." These actors were surprised at the youth going to war. But in times when many hands were needed to farm and provide, often it was the youngest males who were able to leave home and join an army. Reflecting on the war in his memoir, Hugh McDonald noted, "We have had little information with respect of many of the Revolutionary patriots whose names and actions ought never to be forgotten." Here are the captions accompanying the photographs of this article. Sarah Catherine Carter portrayed the fictional character of Ann Taylor. For this role, Sarah Catherine became skilled at wearing reproduction 18th century clothing, writing with a quill pen, and knitting. In the movie, Frank Ard portrayed General George Daugherty, and Scott Parker was General George Washington. These experienced actors helped bring these real people to life. Numbered with a 5, this page of Hugh McDonald's memoir begins in the middle of a sentence about the aftermath of the Battle of Moore's Creek and ends with the name of the officers of the North Carolina Continental Regiments. The cast and crew met many challenges, such as taping the Valley Forge winter scene under the broiling sun while wearing wool uniforms and gathering near a campfire. Actor Spencer Bloom was 14 when he played the part of 14-year-old Hugh McDonald. The film Friends in Liberty is available for streaming from the museum's website. And in 2009, the museum produced Friends in Liberty, North Carolina and the American Revolution, a film based on the journal of Hugh McDonald. McDonald was a North Carolinian who joined the Continental Army at the age of 14 and served in a platoon of teenagers. Pictured, left to right, are then 14-year-old Spencer Bloom, who portrayed Hugh, and high school students Jackson Bloom, Alex Toby, Matt Mollenkopf, and Matt McGrath. Next, it's Revolutionary. On Boston Common in Massachusetts, the Sons of Liberty met under a 100-year-old elm tree to plan protests against British rule. Soon, patriots in other colonies designated Liberty Trees. In 1775, British supporters acknowledged the Boston tree's importance by cutting it down. The last original Liberty tree, a 400-year-old tulip poplar in Annapolis, Maryland, fell during Hurricane Floyd in 1999. Its seedlings continued the Liberty Tree legacy, including one planted in Charlotte's Freedom Park. What is freedom is a question that still resonates. The 250th anniversary of the adoption of the Declaration of Independence occurs on July 4th, 2026. Will there be celebrations? Of course, and reflection, too. This issue of Tar Heel Junior Historian continues the stories shared in the Fall 2023 Prelude to War magazine. Both are a part of the It's Revolutionary series of resources and programs exploring the people, events, and ongoing outcomes of revolutionary times. The Declaration of Independence marked a central point in history, not only for white colonists in Britain, but also for indigenous peoples, free people of color, enslaved persons, and many other folks living in other countries. Freedom meant different things to people then and the following 250 years and now. We recognize the journey toward liberty did not end with the culmination of the Revolutionary War in 1783, but continues. It is our hope that It's Revolutionary demonstrates some of the many viewpoints of those times, and that you feel empowered to explore this history. Do the articles provide insights into those who chose to support the Patriot cause, or the Loyalist cause, or who felt compelled to stay neutral and not take sides? How do the depiction of North Carolina places help you to recognize the history all around you? Do the artifact images invite exploration of the stuff of your own past? What things, writings, media posts, or spaces speak to your story and your choices? We hope It's Revolutionary helps you to see that the past not only affects our today and tomorrows, but that you are making history too. Explore all the It's Revolutionary projects, some in place and some others coming too, at bte250.com. That's bte250.com. We are grateful to the North Carolina Society of the Cincinnati for their support of the North Carolina Museum of History Foundation for It's Revolutionary. And on the back cover, what's that? Here is this issue's history mystery artifact. Can you use your junior historian skills to guess what this object might be? It has some fancy carving. It measures nearly 12 inches long. Do you think that it looks like the top part might come off, like a lid? Can you tell from the photo what material it might be made of? Here's a clue. It's dated circa 1775 to 1780 and was used by someone during the American Revolution. Do you think that it's A, a large, unusually shaped acorn, now extinct, that a bored soldier sitting around a campfire carved as a gift for his mother? B, a trophy from a hunting expedition? C, a powder horn used by a revolutionary soldier to carry gunpowder for his musket to keep dry? Or D, a beautifully carved handle for a gentleman's chest of drawers? The answer is C, it's a powder horn. We've run out of time for today's episode of North Carolina History. Be sure to listen next time. I hope you've enjoyed it. I'm Ed Tremblay, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. This broadcast is readily available as a podcast after the broadcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. So long until next time. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. You can't let it go once you let it flow, that taste of her known. Absence bestows a lush vertigo to set you aglow. You won't be the same when it sets you aflame and your soul is reclaimed.